Who's?
Good morning. Call the Public Safety and Corrections Committee meeting to order. Just remind you to turn your microphones on.
Kelly, move this in.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, approval of the minutes of the January 3rd meeting.
Second.
Any additions or corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Public defender, Sean, you here?
There we go. Good morning, everyone. I'm happy to be back on this issue. I came to you several months ago relative to the ILS Family Court Child Welfare Quality Improvement and Caseload Reduction Grant. We were one of five counties in New York State to be awarded this grant, and they have just delivered the contract. I believe the law departments had an opportunity to look at it, and I don't think they have any issues. I have as well. All the numbers are correct. And so I'm just requesting your permission to execute the contract.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Okay, Tim. Feedback.
Ordering more wire. We have eight wire.
Good morning. A couple items for you this morning. First is the Pinnacle fiber agreement with STN. We'd like to move forward with getting the fiber piece started for the Pinnacle Tower site. It's going to take them quite a while to get the pole agreements and everything in place, so we'd like to move forward with that. We do have grant funding for that, $99,432 for that fiber run.
I'll move it.
Second. You have a question?
No.
Oh,
I second.
Bob? Is the state actually going to give us the ground to set this tower on?
Yeah, it looks like it. The easement process is moving forward. It sounds like they're going to give us an easement, a permanent easement for that property. So when it transfers from Parks over to DEC, there'll be a permanent easement as part of that.
Okay, I just want to make sure we didn't spend $99,000 and they decide they weren't going to let us set up there.
It sounds like right now everything's moving forward in the right direction.
All right.
Okay. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
All right. Next piece is annual maintenance for HP support services. This is for the four county fiber network that we have between Stubenge, Hmong, Schuyler, and Yates. It's an annual maintenance fee of $1,414.75. This is a budgeted item.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a mistake on the agenda because it says $1,414,075 on the agenda.
Yeah, no, it's not that much.
Good.
Not at all. It's only $1,414.75. Yeah, really, for sure. Yeah, make sure that's corrected.
It's an updated agenda.
Yeah, something. I apologize for that. So the final item I have is an RFP for the Cohocton Tower enhancements. When we built the Cohocton site, we put a telephone pole in there as a temporary piece to get that site up and running. It served us well, but now we need to do a more permanent structure there, which is going to be probably like a 60, 70 foot monopole or small tower in that location. So what we'd like to do is go to RFP for a vendor to actually install that short tower for us there.
I'll move it.
I'll second it. May I also?
Okay. Discussion?
Tim, is that something that is funded with grants or yes. Is that in your budget? Or
That can be grant funded as part of the next round of the state interoperable grant funds. Yep.
This is a different one.
Yeah.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. And I did provide you with a copy of the ambulance district maps per Mr. Malter's request. As you can see there, they're broken out into service areas with each of the service areas with the name in blue is the actual service provider for that area. So that's how that's broken out. So if you have any questions in regards to that, please let me know.
So just to remind everybody that at the end of our agenda, we'll be having
a
discussion on the EMS study. So,
okay.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Will you stick around for that, Tim?
Absolutely.
Thank you. All right.
Yep.
You're up.
All right. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Number of things on the agenda today, mostly kind of update stuff. Wanted to start out with the Child Advocacy Center, an update on that program. If you recall, that's grant funded almost entirely. And our goal in our grant, what got us towards, sort of got us the grant we had, was to do 40 child interviews in our first operational year. So that has come to a close. And I've got a nice report from Mark Procopio, our investigator, who's been assisting with that process. Unfortunately, it's got some ongoing case stuff in it. So I've got to pull that back and redact it, and I'll send it out to all of you folks. But our numbers in the last year of operation are 214 interviews. So we are, five times what we had expected to do. It has been a tremendous success. It is rewriting how we do child sex crimes and investigations involving children in Steuben County. So we have had sign-on from all the departments in the county. We've assisted the FBI with investigations. We've assisted Yates County, the New York State Police, Livingston County, Schuyler County. And we've also, obviously, every single law enforcement agency in Steuben County has been involved in CAC interviews. We've also been able to work closely with DSS and Child Protective in protecting our victims. It's changed the way we do grand jury presentations. It is rare now that I have to put a child victim in front of the grand jury and re-traumatize them with testimony about abuse by, in particular, a parent or somebody close to them. And now we can use the videotape and it is, we're getting through the grand jury process and moving forward without re-traumatizing our victims. So it has been an incredible success. I'm sure those numbers will more than ensure our grant going forward. I've talked to Kathy about it. We're both stunned at the level of sort of sign-on we have gotten so far from law enforcement and also how productive the CAC has been. So I think it's been a great thing. Thanks for helping us with the grant process and approving it. And we look forward to moving forward and making this an even bigger part of our law enforcement portfolio as we go forward. To go with that, there is a reality that we have sort of overworked and this moves down a little further in the agenda of my 16B request. Is our investigator for the CAC. We hired investigator Mark Procopio as a part-time investigator to do this job and to do discovery work as well. Part of our grant proposal and the way this program is set up, we have to have a DA's office representative present at all CAC interviews and also to be available for the multidisciplinary team process. Mark has been filling that role that was supposed to be part of what he did, because a lot of what he does is get the information back to us in timely fashion, make sure the video is secured, is logged in, does all that that goes with each one of these, and also make sure that the investigating agency gathers up the rest of their discovery materials for us so we can get turned over in a timely fashion. What that has led to is assisting these agencies, particularly the smaller ones. We've worked well with a couple of amazing cases with Cohocton PD, huge case with Addison PD, also with Wayland and across the county. But that and Canastillo most recently. What that has led to is more work for that investigator than we ever planned for. And obviously, with our numbers being five times what we expected, the workload is dramatically outstripping of one part-time investigator. I have spoken to Nate and I have spoken to Kathy about the idea of adding a second part-time investigator to do this same job so we keep getting it done. This 214 interviews we have done so far, which includes 70 plus in the mobile unit, we've gone out to our communities to do this and made it work a lot better, again, it's five times what we expected in workload, and it's eating up any time that he has and more. I also expect that that is a small number because we're still dealing with lockdown times. Once kids get out, get back into school, they're back into school now, but become more attuned to their school environment, talking to counselors and teachers, our numbers are going to go up this year, next year, than from where they are this year. So what we are asking for is permission at this stage to begin the process, the 16B process, to create a new part-time investigator position under the same sort of requiem or design of the Mark Procopio position, which would be a part-time retiree position locked at the salary that a retired member of law enforcement could receive without endangering their pension, which I think is about $36,000 a year. As far as funding, again, Kathy Muller and I have discussed funding sources, and obviously I'd like to create the position and begin that process now. I would not ask to fill the position or fund it until we have figured out what our funding source would be. But what I'm asking for by the 16B request is asking to have Nate begin going forward with that process to create the job description from what we have, and also to begin the process of creating a position, and then we'll figure out the funding process before we ever figure out funding it or filling it. Yes. A lot are identified in the school system. There are cases that are identified through law enforcement. Either way, either somebody comes in and reports a case, a parent walks in off the street, or they are hotline cases, cases that where child abuse or neglect is reported to a child protective and there's a law enforcement involvement. So there are three avenues in which it can be identified. The school is one of them. The school and the hotline kind of cross over because the school are mandatory reporters. But a lot of these do come out of the schools just because that's often a place where these kids are safe and can talk to some adult and make a report. And then all of our school officials are mandatory reporters. Yes, we always have. That has been a reality in Steuben County as long as I've been here, and February marks year 28 that I've been here. So we have always had a tremendous number of child sex abuse cases. They're in anybody. I see Mr. Mayo nodding his head. He does family court work. He's seen it. Anybody who does family court, that's a reality we deal with on a regular basis here in Steuben County. They do not investigate these. They do sometimes take the complaint. Again, that's one of the great things about having resource officers there is they develop those relationships with kids. So we do get some of these hotline through resource officers. But as far as investigatory stuff, that's not what they're assigned to do. And we utilize specialized investigators for this process. The training to do CAC interviews is extensive. You've got to be certified to ask questions in the right way to make sure you're not leading the kids, make sure that you're getting things, you're getting their information, not providing them information. That's the goal of the process. And that's why we depend on the CAC for that. It's a new way to do it, and it's producing really high quality interviews. Yes.
How many of these interviews would you say have to do with sexual abuse, other forms of physical abuse, and maybe things having to deal with straight up more neglectful issues?
I'm going to say these are 90, well, with the exception of two large cases, that are currently under investigation, 90% of these are sex abuse or physical abuse investigation. And some have come up with nothing. I mean, we get one of those, we get a complaint and we interview the child and we do a CAC interview and they say nothing happened. Somebody gets cleared. We also follow up with an investigation and go through the process. We don't just accept it at face value necessarily. because kids often want to protect their abusers. But that's the double-edged sword of the CAC, is it not only creates better cases and doesn't traumatize the kids, but it also gives us a way to sort of quietly clear or unfound an allegation if we have to.
We've seen a huge uptick too, Brooks, mm-hmm. in the law department with juveniles committing these acts against other juveniles, and the CAC is used for that too. We didn't used to see a whole lot of these. I think we'd have couple a year, and now a majority of them are sex abuse children against children.
Jeff. Brooks, when you say that you guys help Livingston and Schuyler and stuff with this program, do they also have a program? Is it helping them with their overflow, or are we actually?
No, they don't. They do not have a CAC. Yates, Livingston, and Skyler do not have a CAC. They've used Bavona up in Rochester, who we used to use, which is a great resource. They're one of the best in the country. But the problem is you got to schedule that, and it's very difficult to get into. And so you might have to wait a couple of weeks or longer to get an interview done, and that is not productive for the process. Now we can do it right here in-house. And we have one of the curses of this job for our investigator is and the folks from DSS, Child Protective, is they're on call 24/7. So if this is a Sunday afternoon, or if it's a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock at night, they're going to go down and do the interview if that's when it needs to be done to make sure the child's in a safe place and get the information. So, but what we are doing is helping them with interviews in their cases. And in all three of those jurisdictions, these cases often overlap into Steuben County. We're a big area geographically, but a small area people-wise.
So I assume we have to have a motion to move this process forward.
That's why I'm asking.
Get a motion and a second, and then we'll have further discussion. Okay. Now further discussion. Got anything else, Jeff? So this is just moving this forward to administration.
Yes,
I'm assuming. Have to go to full. And then the full board, and this doesn't approve anything at this point.
And all
in favor?
That's what I'm asking for.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
All right, thank you. Now, the second thing, kind of going back to what was to be our second thing on the agenda, is a report on the traffic diversion program for 2021. This has been, I won't say Noel's baby, but I think he spent more time with it than his children in the last year. So I will, I'm going to have Noel explain to you where we are in traffic diversion and how the program has been doing. So Noel, do you mind giving that report, please?
I want to apologize first. I went to print out a nice spreadsheet that I made with some pie graphs and a whole ton of stuff. I plugged my USB in, and for some reason, it does not want to work. So I do have the numbers preliminary here. I will email that out before the end of the day. I just have to grab it off my laptop at home. So I just... This year in 2021, we had over 3,000 applicants. The number's almost 3,300. And we brought a revenue in. And this number is from Diversion Management. They work with a credit card company, and they haven't balanced the books exactly yet. So this is an estimated figure I have passing out. It's out of the 3,226 applications, the county received a fee of $800,000. I'm sorry. I apologize. $880,995. So, apologize on that. So we took in quite a bit more than we anticipated in our budget. Out of that, there's a municipality sums there. I'll get out to your emails today. I actually broke it down into districts to show your districts. And as you look through that, you can tell that the districts that received the jurisdictions that received the most funding were jurisdictions that align along the interstates. I-99 corridor, 390, 17, and the 86 corridor. So there were a few towns that didn't receive any funding. I think there was three in total that I had. And out of that $800,000, our operating budget for the services and for the clerk that we have, but she comes out of our general budget part-time that helps. We're under 15% in operating budget. So again, I apologize. I worked on it all weekend. I'm a little frustrated right now. The more I try to fix it, the worse it got. So
Noel, I'm assuming this is 2021.
Yes, 2021 numbers. Yes.
So out of the 881,000, what was distributed to the municipalities was 238,000.
Yes.
What you're telling me?
Yes.
So breakdown of the balance of that situation, which is what, $650,000 sitting out there, where'd that money go to?
There was about 10% of that went to diversion management. So about 60,000, between 60 and 65,000. And then the remainder is in the general budget line.
And your original resolution did have a carve out for law enforcement grants, essentially, I believe. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's something that certainly could go forward. If not, then it just parks in the general fund until you do something else with it.
So I went back through and I was looking at the town of Welland.
Yes, sir.
When we had the driver diversion program in the past, they generated like $140,000 a year. And all of a sudden we reinstated this thing. And I know we didn't get started right away in 21, but they only generated $45,000 last year. So is there a difference in what's being allocated at this point?
Well, I believe, no, sir. The allegation is very similar to, what was received before. It's a percentage now. So they receive, before it was $80 per ticket in our previous. This one, it's a percentage, which comes out to a standard speeding ticket. It's about $74 and some change. Now, if there's an additional ticket, that percentage increases. So if there's two tickets in an instance, it's somewhere between $74 and $100 generally. So in my opinion, I believe it balances out. I could do those figures for you from pulling it and get the exact numbers. But I think what plays in effect right now is, one, the staffing of police that monitor the highways and the interstate is greatly decreased currently due to retirements and COVID and not backfilling. Second is that patrol areas and courts' relationships with those patrols varies from year to year. I can tell you that I know that the previous justices that in your district were retired police officers. So they have a very close relationship with their officers. So to be frank, they probably, those officers and those courts had a tight relationship, and more tickets may have been issued in that town than in the town south or the town north.
And all kinds of things. The other reality here, I think, is, you know, Wayland is an interstate court, but that's where most of those tickets come from. In the last year, and that's a New York State, traditionally a New York State police role.
For the people online. Right.
And that's traditionally a New York State police role. In 2021, the New York State police spent a lot of their time dealing with things outside of Steuben County. The sheriff, oops, he's not here, but I think he's going to be here, can tell you how short-staffed they were on a very regular basis at the state police level. So they were dealing with the riots in Rochester that happened multiple times. They were sent to New York City for different things. They were pulling staff away from our local barracks to work off in other places.
What you're telling me is that they weren't writing tickets.
That's correct. Or they didn't have the same number of bodies on the highway to do that job. They're answering other calls. I mean, if they've only got two cars on and one car has gone to Rochester, the other car is going to be coming to somebody's house as a first responder and probably not sitting on the highway writing tickets.
Thank you.
So I think that's one of the big reasons that the Wayland number is down. I would expect we'll see that change in the future.
Kelly?
When we reinstated the program, didn't we change the way the dollars were allocated to the towns because of the...
Yeah,
we didn't, the way it looked what we were doing, and we had to do it as an education element rather than paying them off to process a ticket.
Correct. Previously, it was a court issue, and I believe the money was distributed to the courts, which would be the state. Now the money goes directly to the municipality, so I don't think it's comparing apples and oranges Because if that money went to the state previously, we all know the state got the municipality got a small portion of that money that went to the state, where this time it all goes to the municipality.
Steve?
Yeah, for either one of you. About how many, about what percentage, and I know I keep asking for numbers here, would you say of the tickets that are written get applied to the diversion program, apply to the diversion program, part two, how many of those get approved to go through diversion? And part three, do we have a set of objective criteria to determine what gets approved for diversion and what doesn't?
I'll take the third part, the third one last. There is an objective set of criteria based upon speed, based upon record, based upon nature of the ticket. Certain things are out of bounds. Passing a school bus never gets in. Speed over a certain number, I think it's over 90, doesn't get in, or 93. There's a number we've talked about local courts about what they're comfortable with. So part of this was working with local courts and figure out what's appropriate. But there is a set of criteria that it says you get in or you don't get in. So yes, as far as what percentage of overall tickets, it's hard to say. We do anywhere in the last 5 years, between 25,000 and 65,000 tickets in a year, which is why revenues go up and down in our courts so dramatically. Presuming we're on the lower end this year, somewhere around 30,000 tickets, we're looking about 10% of our folks are using the diversion program to resolve their tickets. So it's, pardon?
Just 10%?
Just 10%.
Really? Wow.
We're trying to encourage more because it's more efficient for the courts. It's better for the county. It's more efficient for the office, and it's better for the driver. But that's, that's about the percentage we have right now, about 10%. And I don't know what percentage get accepted. I'm thinking somewhere around 80, I'm guessing. It's a high percentage get accepted.
Wow. I mean, I'm surprised. So really it's only 8% of the tickets that get written would be go through diversion.
Yes.
And that's all that's reflected on here.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Well, Noel, it sounds like the program is going really well since we reinstated it, and thank you for all your work on it. So.
Yes, sir.
Scott?
Do the three new legislators have any question on what this program is? I mean, maybe a 5 minute.
You want 5 minutes? You want
not the 50 minute, just the 5 minute. This is why we do what we're doing.
All right. So what the driver diversion program is a traffic safety program. The idea here is that, I guess I'll give you the whole 5 minutes instead of three and a half. A long time ago, as a county employee, we have to go through a driver safety insurance reduction course every 2 years. It drove me nuts to sit there, but the reality is every time I walked out, I came away with something I think made me a safer driver, begrudgingly. When it comes to traffic tickets, we're trying to figure a way to make Steuben County a safer place and make our highway safer. And then there's also a revenue add to that as well. But on the safety side, my thought was for most people paying a fine of $250 or $300 or more, depending upon the nature of your ticket, does nothing except make you mad at the police and doesn't make you a better, safer driver. So what we did is create this traffic diversion program where someone with a relatively clean record and with a certain specific collection of violations can apply to the program. As part of that program, they complete an insurance reduction, point reduction, driver safety course. If they successfully complete that course, we withdraw the ticket. There's a fee for that, depending upon the number of violations that's paid to the county. And basically, we figure those fees out is about what it costs us to prosecute or deal with a ticket across the county. We send money back to the municipalities to cover their law enforcement and court costs. There's some law enforcement grants worked in there to help law enforcement increase traffic safety enforcement. And then there's money goes back to our office to cover costs of prosecution and offset other costs, including some of the new discovery costs we have. That's the program in a nutshell. It's gotten great reviews, particularly from the first really solid reviews I got were from parents of kids who maybe at 17 would have lost a license, but instead have to give up a Saturday and go to this course, and they learn to become a safer driver, and they keep their license, and there's still a sanction that comes back and helps the county out. When we are not in COVID world, we do live classes. That's one of the pieces of this that I like a lot. The sheriff's office does those. They have trained and certified folks to give those classes. And when we are doing those classes live, the sheriff focuses those classes on traffic safety issues in Steuben County at the time. So if we're having people passing school buses, if we're having a lot of one car accidents for distracted driving, if we have a lot of issues with weather, then the sheriff's office will focus the course within the required
criteria of the course to focus on those issues that are unique to us. I'm sorry, my phone keeps ringing. But that's what the program is.
Thank you. Moving right along.
Okay. Yes. All right. I don't think I did 50 minutes. All right. There are other issues we can do 50 minutes on. Anyway, just the rest of my information for you folks is aimed at updating where we are on our office management plan. We have yet to hire our office manager. We've been working with Nate, I was speaking with him last week, in refining the job description. That's where we kind of ran into a snag. Initially, the state-driven description was largely a bookkeeping description, which is not what we need. We need a people manager. So Nate is refining that for us and should have it out. I'm thinking this week is what his promise was, and then clear it through the state. And he promised that he's got some people there who can clear it pretty quickly. And we do have a person in line who fits those qualifications. If the qualifications change, that may change that for us. But our goal is to have that up and running relatively soon. We did just lose one of our primary paralegals, the woman who came through and helped us start the discovery program. I got hired by the private sector for more money, which is sort of that's our employee retention thing. I know that's something that you folks are going to be addressing here in the next few months, but that's a reality that keeps hitting us. It's going to be a tough spot to fill. There is an open test right now, and there are some people on it. So we're hoping to have more successful in this position than we have in the past and be able to do it more quickly. Right now, because of that, we still have one vacant position that we have been trying to kind of recraft to fit what our organizational plan requires. So we have two open spots, so we're a little bit stressed right now, clerical wise. Beyond that, we have begun our own in-house sort of baseline survey of where we are under the new plan after about 2 months in the new offices and operating under the plan, just to see where we are, what the employees think, and how we're doing with our goals, and give us a place to make sure that this is where we start and get better each time we do one every 6 months. So that's, and we've also put in new processes for the grand jury process, for pleas, for screening of files, and we're reorganizing the whole process. Once we get the office fully furnished and staffed, it'll be interesting to see how it works, but I think it's going to be great. Okay. Anything else? All right. Bob?
A question. I don't know if this is for the sheriff or you, but the town of Addison, the village of Addison, opted out of the marijuana business, and they've got at least two stores selling stickers or some darn thing. And they got a flag out front with a wacky weed flag out front, open for business.
I drove by over the weekend and went to my son's house. Yeah, I saw it. It's a really nice ad to Main Street in Addison.
So I was wondering, you know, they were supposed to have dispensaries. What's the sense of dispensaries if I guess it looks like, I don't know, looks like they're breaking the law, but I guess
they are breaking the law. It's illegal to sell marijuana, and a sticker sale is a sale. The problem is, under the penal law, a sale of marijuana is a violation level offense, which means the only way you can arrest for it is if the officer actually sees it happen in his presence. So they have to be standing in the store watching the sale take place. And they're not going to let them in the store to watch the sale take place. So that's it. I know I just spoke to Carol about it. I talked to Hilda about it. The state folks have told us what they're doing is illegal, but there's really no mechanism for enforcement. So we are working on a process. All right. So as far as straight up enforcement of those offenses, it's almost impossible. In fact, I went to the post office in Bath here the other day, walked out, and there are people walking into their sticker store, and I watched a barker from someplace else come over and try to lure him away to go buy someplace else. And he went back and forth for about 5 minutes and looked like he was offering a better deal. That's not something we can tolerate in Dubuque County. It's not right. I have, well, I guess I met with Aaron Mullen last week in the Bath Chief of Police. I just talked to Carol about it. I talked to Hilda about it. One of my thoughts is the possibility of a local law, something that we can do to limit what they are doing and how they are doing it that would be lawful. And there's I've got a couple of different ideas. I need to talk to Jen about those because they just sort of came to me over the weekend and in my conversations with Aaron, but a different way to skin the cat until they get these regulations up and running. They're saying 6 to 12 months before they get up and running. But the reality is you can't sell marijuana that's not grown in New York State under the dispensary rules. So if it takes them 6 to 12 months to get a program together, then people are going to have to start ramping up a lawful growing process, get those permits. You know, we're probably 18 months from lawful dispensaries in New York State. So between now and then, we may have to do some things to regulate on our own if that's appropriate. And I think it is. We've already had one overdose in Steuben County with somebody who has bought or been gifted, not in one of these sticker stores, but in a more private setting, fentanyl-laced marijuana and overdose. The Sheriff's Department's investigated that. And that's the fear here. Whether you're pro or anti-marijuana doesn't really matter. You want to make sure that when people get marijuana, they get marijuana. They don't get something oregano laced with fentanyl or grass clippings laced with LSD or something else. So that's the goal, is to make sure that if they're going to sell it, let's do it the way we sell alcohol and tobacco and everything else.
So yep. Brooks, as far as the marijuana that's being distributed at this point, mm-hmm. And my understanding is there's really no grow houses at this point that's generating marijuana in this state. This stuff has to be coming in from out of New York State.
It's either coming from out of New York State where it's lawful, and a lot of it's being mailed in at this point, just like methamphetamine and other things from states where it is legal. And the postal inspectors are not doing very much about it, to be very frank with you. Or it's being grown here illegally. I mean, or maybe even grown legally. You can grow small amounts of marijuana, possess small amounts of marijuana, or pretty substantial amounts, actually. So wherever it's getting into these stores, it's not getting into these stores in the way it's supposed to get into stores for being sold in New York State. It's not being tested. It's not being certified. It's not being taxed.
Dave?
Yeah, we were talking about this, I think, at the legislative meeting. I mean, I guess from my point of view, it's like, why would anybody go through the whole licensing and on-premises sale regimen if this is the penalties for doing it outside of that regime are so minimal? And I don't mean to catch up, but
no.
I mean, it's like, and I think I said last time, why has nobody thought about this since prohibition was repealed and do the same thing for liquor? I mean, I've been looking at more of a, you know, more of a economic fairness point of view than some moral point of view, but there's got to be a way to protect the people who are doing it the right way, I guess.
And I think there's no question. I mean, the idea is doing it the right way protects society from anything bad happening. That's why they do it for alcohol, so you don't get moonshine that makes people blind. They do it for cigarettes, so that you get lawfully produced cigarettes, not something with strychnine in it. They're doing it for marijuana, so you get marijuana, not fentanyl-laced marijuana like one of our other Steuben County residents got. So there has to be a process in place. And this, if this were to be envisioned as law for legal, I could sell guns the same way. I could sell you a sticker for $500 and give you a Glock to go with it. It doesn't, you know, that end run process is unlawful.
And we have had conversations, and I'm sure Brooks and a lot of legislators here have, with Assemblyman Pomazano, Senator O'Mara, and others to try to get state legislation, because it's, I mean, if it's a problem here, it's a major problem in some of the larger cities. So, you know, we're, I guess, hopeful that there might be some, and again, it's in the state's interest, not only from a public safety standpoint, but from a financial standpoint, because they're banking on a lot of tax revenue from this.
Scott, I sent all of you the email link to the Cannabis Office of Cannabis Management that's holding those 1 hour Zoom meetings. You should sign up for one of them. They're all regional, but it doesn't matter. You don't have to be in the region to sign up for it. I think they're very informative. They have a long way to go with this. I can't believe that people think that this law is in place, because they're, like Brooks says, they're saying 6 to 12 months before they get all their ducks in a row as far as the rules and the fine. I mean, it was amazing to me. You can't call it marijuana in New York State. It has to be cannabis because marijuana has a racial connotation to it. And the reason this law was passed was because the majority of the people that were fined, imprisoned, and penalized were different races. And the state law says that now at least 50%, no less than 50% of all licenses for any of these 9 different licenses you can get have to go to equity people. So they're trying to make up for years of fines and penalties and unfair based on race by saying that half of all of this is going to be only handed out to equity residents. But you should sign up for this class and sit and listen to it. And then they have a very good question and answer section after that where you can email in a question and they read it. And the lady who's the chairman of this Office of Cannabis Management, she's an attorney in the Bronx. She used to be an assemblywoman. She answers all the questions.
So I guess with that said, what I hope to be able to is come to you next month with a proposal for a local law that to be a stopgap until they put this in place.
Hey, Hilda, go ahead.
So I think I've already said this a few times, but I have emailed every state assemblyman and senator 3 times about sticker stores in the last few months, and I have gotten 1 response each time. And it's very hard to understand why they're not doing something. First of all, I don't get a response from Pomazano or O'Mara at all out of those 3 emails. So I'm not sure who's paying attention, but certainly I think this local law may get their attention. And the second thing is I listened to that cannabis conversation and she didn't have an answer for anything. It's all, oh, well, we're going to work on that. Oh, we'll work on that and it'll come. But the thing that really bothers me is that the state is looking at spending $200 million on helping these minorities get licenses, set up their offices and their stores and helping them, $200 million to help them. And it just, I don't understand. I really don't.
Carol?
I was just going to say, I also watched that webinar, and the thing that shocked me was they don't even know how they're going to get rid of the waste from this process. And, you know, I think that should have been one of the foremost things they should have thought about. And I also submitted 2 questions, and the presentation answered one of them, but I never got an answer for the second question.
Well, I can't tell you, I've spoken with Senator O'Mara about this. I will not share his quotes with you because we're on a public record and it would not be the right thing to say in this building. But his feelings about it are strong and he's very frustrated with things in Albany. It's sort of yelling down a hole when you want to start regulating marijuana things, and he's been very frustrated with it. So I don't think we're going to get much relief on this issue from Albany. And that's why I think we need to take some steps here. And I'll, like I said, after I have a chance to talk to Jen about the idea I've got for a local law, then hopefully we can unveil it in front of you guys next month and see what you think.
What would a local law consist of? What would it cover?
Well, the idea is to cover the gifting thing. My general thought is that we would make it unlawful in Steuben County to give away a controlled, something that's controlled or regulated by New York State as a premium with or as part of a purchase of another item. So there's a marijuana control board, there's a liquor control board, there's a tobacco control board, and then there's the ATF. You can't give away a box of ammunition with the sale of a sticker. You can't give away a handgun with the sale of a sticker. You shouldn't be able to give away a marijuana or a bottle of booze. But the folks who do sell it, I mean, you ought to be able, liquor store needs to be able to be able to do a buy one, get one free if they're going to do that. Or maybe, you know, Wegmans has to be able to deal with something with their beer and that kind of stuff. So we have to draft it in a way that makes people who can sell these things lawfully be able to sell their products, but people who can't, not. Yes, sir.
The thing there in Addison, there's supposed to be so many feet, what, 300 feet or something, or 500 feet from school property. I mean, the school owns right up to the back of that building, so it's about 50 feet or less.
Right, so no dispensary can, no lawful dispensary will ever be there. Yeah. That's, this sticker store is not a lawful dispensary.
Right.
It's not subject to state regulation.
I say it's within,
it doesn't exist yet.
It's within 50 feet of school property.
So it sounds like we need to move forward in a hurry with this local law.
Yes.
Put it on the front burner. And we'll Steve, one more question, okay, and then we're going to wrap this up.
Let me, I'm sitting here just thinking at the moment. Until the dispensaries are actually up in operation, is there any thought that it would be better at least to have these sales out in the open rather than going back to 100% unregulated sale scheme, which is what we've been doing for 100 years? And I'm just talking temporarily, because isn't it better in some way that it's happening out there in the open rather than we're just going back 100% underground?
Well, it's still significantly underground. And that's what's more disconcerting is these folks are now, they're pooling cash. They can't put in bank accounts. They can't do anything with it. So these are cash-based businesses that create all of the bad things that go along with a cash-based criminal enterprise. They're getting those drugs somewhere illegally. They're buying them. They're trafficking, and they're paying people to bring it in far larger quantities than most, you know, most of our dealers in Steuben County who were selling marijuana to meet a small customer base are not selling pounds and pounds and pounds like these stores are. They're selling smaller quantities. And so we don't have that high level of profit margin, which comes with it, the higher level of risk of violence. So that's my thought. And they're not operating right next to a school. So,
well, and should this topic be directed to Carol's committee sitting out there, human services, isn't this a major problem for public health sitting out there?
Well, I think it's a public safety issue because the conduct is unlawful. You know, we've done local laws to deal with public safety issues here in the past, like the Swap Shop Act we did a long time ago with meth trafficking, our misdemeanor forfeiture law to deal with drugs being trafficked through and catching folks on the wrong side of drug transactions. So I'll be happy to, I will float the proposal when we work out something that with Jen's help is lawful. You guys tell me what committee to put in front of it, and I'll go. That's a legislative issue. That's not a me issue.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Check
for the sheriff.
Sure thing. So sheriff is at training. So going to handle this for him. Amanda sent you on the regarding the fencing project in the jail. We're proposing to use Gordian, and Andy has reviewed this, which is that joint purchasing agreement that the town of Greece put out that we have used for other mechanicals or construction projects. And the pricing looks very fair and actually under what we have budgeted. So looking to award under the Gordian contract for $99,746.42. And we have budgeted in the capital project $120,000.
So this fencing is due to a situation within the jail that somebody jumped over a railing?
For additional safety measures within the jail on the second floor.
Okay. I'll move it.
I'll second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to the item that I had for you all. In working with Bonadio and in our discussions with the district attorney, since full audit of forfeiture accounts have not been conducted standalone, and it's not part of the annual audit that Bonadio does, we're looking to amend the Bonadio contract for auditing that finance has to not exceed $5,000 for a forfeiture audit. And Bonadio feels very comfortable with that in terms of the financial audit process, procedure audit, and looking to get that contract amended. Now, I will also would like to propose a contingent fund transfer to our account in the amount to the county manager budget in the amount of $8,000, because we could put it in finance, but we don't have this budgeted anywhere.
We need a motion to allow the budget transfer
and to amend the contract to encompass this. Yeah.
And Jack, if I may, I think it's a great idea, and we account to Oasis every year, but there has been no formal review of the process in since we initiated 20 years ago. So I think it's a great idea to do it now. And so long as we don't have to pay for it, I'm all in favor of it.
I'll make the motion. Can we make one motion for both?
Sure.
Transfer and
mm-hmm.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Okay, so I got a few minutes left to discuss the EMS study sitting out there and what my proposal is. Sat, talked to Scott and Jack, and instead of setting up a separate committee to review this and try to come up with some proposals, I decided to use the Public Works or Public Safety Committee to do this. I had Tim send you out or gave you this morning a copy of the map of all the districts. My district, which is Welland and Cohocton, I met with the people involved with both the ambulance group in Cohocton and also in Welland, and met with them for a couple hours and got a lot of feedback from them as to where their problems were. I think each of the committee members sitting out there should probably set up a meeting with those units in your district sitting out there and sit down with them and find out where their main problems are and if they can see any resolve to that. So I want to set up a meeting at some point with just the county officials, the committee, Tim's office, and whoever else we think from the county needs to be involved with the initial meeting sitting out there to discuss this study and where we want to go with it. So, Fred?
John, two of the municipalities in my district are serviced by ambulance corps that are not in my district. Rathman is serviced by Addison and Cameron, and West Union is serviced by Greenwood and Independence. I have no jurisdiction over Independence, and I have no jurisdiction over Cameron. How would I do that?
Well, you could still ask for a meeting. You don't have any jurisdiction anyway, Spencer, but you
well, can ask for a meeting. I'm saying in terms of them being out of my district.
Well, I don't see a problem with that. So I guess what I'm looking for is who's servicing your district, sit down with them sitting out there to find out what they think they need help with. I know from my conversation, the biggest thing is recruitment, and that was put out in the first 90 pages of this study sitting out there. Mm-hmm. And the problem is filling positions. Even Cohocton has a problem filling the EMS positions in Cohocton at this point. So, and I think that's the biggest problem. No matter what we come up with, we're going to have a lack of personnel that we're going to have to deal with and how we're going to proceed with this. And my feeling is, you know, the county should not be in the ambulance business. So I think we're looking at some alternative as to how to provide some support and maybe shore up the ambulance service in these rural areas sitting out there. But that's what I'm looking at. So I think I put together a list of people from the county sitting out there that I want to have at a meeting and then get back to each of you committee to see what's good for you as far as the time. So
I can also provide you with points of contact and contact numbers for those folks that oversee these corps in these areas.
That would be good. So
you'll email that to us.
What's that?
You'll email that to us.
Yeah, I can email it.
Yeah. And, you know, in speaking with Mr. Malter and the chairman, you know, having that first meeting with county officials to kind of get, you know, the internal take or feedback or information for you all. And then you can schedule, not really hearings, but you can bring in agencies that you would like, you know, kind of piece by piece instead of, you know, my worry was, you know, you'll have a 4-hour meeting. If you bring everyone in at once, I think you structure it, you know, so over the course of a few months, you can hear from the interested parties that you need to and want to.
Tim sent Kelly and John and I an email yesterday, which was basically an article about ambulance services in Mississippi, but it's very indicative of the same problem rural America is experiencing. So I forwarded it to all the legislators this morning. I think personnel, the aging quote unquote volunteer issue is a big driver. But as this article points out, and we don't have any control over it, is the fact that ambulance services are having a hard time retaining people because they can't pay them enough because they only get paid if they haul a patient. So they have all sorts of expenses. They show up, they treat, whatever. Unless they haul, they can't get reimbursed. And so they don't make enough money in order to pay their people enough money to keep them. That's nothing we have any control over other than pushing it north to.
No, and that's why you're seeing so many of these agencies do transports, which they make a good amount. I mean, that's how a lot of these companies are able to float, is they do transports. So then your units are out of the area because they have to do transports, number one, because they'll have to get transported, but they also need the revenue.
Right.
So.
And from the other meetings we've had sitting out there, you know, these places are only generating about 45% of their actual cost sitting out there, which is the main problem in this whole thing. So,
right.
I think the first step is just to sit down with the county people sitting out there that have involvement and see what we come up with, and then schedule some meetings down the line. This is not going to be a situation that's going to happen in 2 months or 3 months. It might take a year to come up with a solution, but at least we're starting it.
Right.
John, this is Hilda. I think when last year, I went to the NYSAC conference. And of course, that was one of the main seminars was about this, because we're not the only ones in the state or in the country. And there were a couple of speakers, one that has taken on as a county to support ambulance services. And the other one was doing what we're talking about. So we should at least be reaching out to some of these other agencies to see what they're doing and learn from their mistakes.
Well, and I don't want to commit for a colleague and friend, but Livingston has gone through this exact issue. And Ian Coyle has the administrator in Livingston has a lot of information on it. So I'm sure, you know, again, I don't want to commit for him, but I bet he would be willing to, you know, help provide some information if you'd like at one of your meetings.
Okay. You have anything to offer, Tim?
No, I think, you know, this is the best direction to take and to reference Mr. Potter had sent an email to a few of you this morning regarding the town of Greenwood. I did speak with the gentleman over in Andover. He's actually a Greenwood volunteer, but doesn't respond with Greenwood because he has commitments to Andover. But the concern there was that Andover is running a lot of mutual aid calls because they have dedicated staff at Andover. So when we don't have an ambulance on a western end of the county, you know, we continue to branch out for mutual aid. Andover gets pinged for that, then they come into Steuben County for that response. We're seeing this as well over into Pennsylvania. Nelson Ambulance comes up into Tuscarora, Addison, Woodhall quite a bit and responds to calls because, again, Nelson Ambulance over on the other side of the border has a paid staff on during the day. So, you know, they're able to respond to a lot of the calls where we can't get volunteers out. It seems to be where crews are having paid staff, you know, the Cohocton Valley Ambulance, Bath Ambulance, of course, AMR, and these corps that have dedicated staff during the day are covering the gaps of where our volunteers are missing. And now we're starting to burn out those corps by coming into our area more often. So it's, you know, we're in a definite catch 22 at this situation now. And, you know, we need to move forward.
I know that there's a paid staff across the border from me. Paid service down there in just outside of Osceola. And they will sit there and listen to the calls come in, and they will decide whether they're going to go out or not. And I know there's calls that they haven't gone out on, and so somebody's had to transport them privately.
Right.
And that's an issue.
Yeah. And we're seeing that, you know, more and more that, you know, we'll wait, you know, 20, 30, 40 minutes to see if we can get a core out the door. And when we can't get one, you know, a lot of times they'll say, well, we're going to pile them in the car. We're going to take them ourselves. And that's unfortunate. But the concern is some of these calls that don't require an ambulance, and you could very easily put them in the car and take them to an urgent care or a doctor's office instead of putting them in an ambulance, that burns out your cores as well. So there's a lot of misuse of the EMS system. And, you know, again, the volunteers are the ones that take the blunt of that. And we're just struggling to try and get volunteers out the door.
So we'll try to put together a list of people within the next month and then send out, you know, a date that, and I'm assuming we can do that during the day, sitting out there seeing Sauk County staff for the first
time. Yeah, you could. One of the ideas was, I mean, you were, Mr. Malter, speaking about, you know, running long for Public Works. You could have your regular meeting, Public Works, since most of you all stay anyhow, and then go right into a special PSNC meeting for that purpose.
That might be the workable situation. So, okay.
So, John, you're recommending that in the meantime, we set up meetings with our own town EMS systems?
I think that's a great idea. I did that with Cohocton and Welland and got a lot of feedback. And I think that's where we're going to get the information as to how we're going to help the county out in filling those voids. And I think it's got to come from, and when we do a study, it's all done by asking people within, you know, a department, mm-hmm. what they see as the problems and solutions, and we can do that ourselves. So,
but didn't the study already do that? They've sat down with each department and asked them where the problems were.
I think you need to do that to enhance the situation. When I read the report, I didn't get any of the feedback I got out of Welland and Cohocton out of that report. So, Kelly.
Yes, I was going to say that the chief in Campbell was indicating to me he didn't like the way the numbers were presented in the EMS study. So I think you might find it more valuable to get the information directly from your ambulance service provider to get their actual take on it, because someone else getting that information and then presenting it in a written format for you, it might just have a different take.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, we're adjourned.